evangelism is to the church what the veins are to the body. Someone said if you cut the church anywhere, it'll bleed evangelism. Evangelism is vascular. It is the life blood of the church. To say of a congregation that that church majors in evangelism is like saying a doctor majors in healing. That's just what doctors do. And that's what we as congregations do. And if you are a part of a congregation that used to have more members than it does now, that would be common in many parts of the country. Something has to change if your trajectory has been like this over the last 20 years. Where is it going to be in 20 more years? You can do the math. You can, if the congregation has gone from 200 to 70 or to 40 over the last 30 or 40 years, where is it going to be if the Lord delays His coming? Now, that trajectory can be turned around and it can start in the other direction. And it begins with a decision. It begins with a congregation whose heart catches fire for the lost in its community. They get outside of themselves, their habits, their routines, their selfishness, their regular hobbies and daily activities, and they begin to dedicate more and more time to inviting, teaching, visiting, encouraging those who are outside the church and those who are no longer with the church to come and see, to be a part of the church, to learn, to grow. Now, tonight we're going to look at, you can start in John 4. I'm going to put on the screen. Someone asked how you could get these notes, and I'll leave my iPad available after the service. If you want to take a picture of any of these notes, you may. But we're going to focus on those three questions right in the middle of that screen. That may be too small for you to see, but I'm going to say everything's on the screen so you can get it either visually or verbally. So what we're going to do is look at these three questions in this first hour. Second hour, we're going to talk about the secular world. How do we evangelize right now, right here in our world as it is, not as it used to be? And we're going to go back to Acts 17 and see what Paul did to get the gospel into Athens, very much like our culture long ago. But the three questions are, how much am I willing to care? Number two, how involved am I willing to get? Number three, what will I let stop me? You could not stop the Apostle Paul. Once he was converted, he preached the gospel outside the church, outside of prison, whenever they let him out. And when he went into prison, he preached in there. He preached when he was on a missionary journey, they locked him up and there was nobody to preach to. So he wrote the Bible, 14 books. You couldn't stop him. The only way they ever stopped him was to cut his head off in about AD 68. He had been a Christian for 30 years at that time. And it was in his heart. His heart was on fire. Jeremiah said, when he tried to quit preaching, he did quit preaching one time because he was being persecuted and life was hard. And he said, I just quit. God, you deceived me. This is Jeremiah 27-9. And he said, when he wasn't preaching, it was a fire in his bones. And he could not withhold or withstand. He couldn't stop. He said, I had to preach. So when our bones get on fire, spiritual bones are on fire, then the church will grow. It's more about us than it is about the community. It's more about the members than it is about the lost. Because what's in our hearts will determine the most powerful force on earth. I remember reading that Ferdinand Foch was a military strategist, and he said the most powerful force on earth is a human spirit on fire. Helen Keller said life is either a great adventure or it's nothing. hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. God can take someone small in his own eyes and her own eyes and can do things that a person who has more talent, more ability, more opportunity will never accomplish, because God can do more through a little person, to his glory, a regular person, than anybody in the world could ever accomplish without God. Now, let's go into John 4. What we're going to talk about in this point is, how much am I willing to care? You know, there are two most famous passages in the New Testament are John 3:16 and 1 Corinthians 13. John 3:16 is about God's love for us. 1 Corinthians 13 is about our love for others. The two most important passages in the New Testament are about love. And what is passion? What is love? But what is passion but love on fire? Jesus said, God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life. 1 Corinthians 13, Paul said, whether there's prophecies, whether there's tongues, whether there's knowledge, it shall vanish away. But that which would last is described as being long-suffering, patient, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things, love. We started this series talking about lukewarm Christians. We're ending tonight in this part of the lesson talking about loving God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. That's Mark 12:30. And those are the four parts of us. Heart, that's our emotions. Soul, a heart is love that shows itself in the countenance. If there's a young lady who's engaged to a young man, deeply in love with him, you mention his name and her face just lights up. That's the love of the heart. And Jesus said, love God with all your heart. Love him emotionally. And then loving God with all the soul is love that is expressed in worship. God, I'm here not because I have to be here. I want to be here. I want to sing your songs. I want to ask your blessings. I want to remember your son's death. I want to hear your word for my life preached. I want to support your work in the world. Those are the five acts of worship on a Sunday. That's love being expressed through worship. That's love of the soul. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind. That's love that's expressed in words. That's the love that grows, because we learn more about God the longer we serve him. And we love him more on our last day than we ever could have loved him on our first day as a Christian. We express those words in three ways of love for God: prayer, song, and conversation. The third one is what we're looking at in this series. How often do I talk about God in conversation? How often do I bring him up among those who don't yet understand how much they need him in their lives? Number four, with all the strength, that's love that is expressed in deeds. So I get out of my comfort zone, I step out, and I talk to someone, I visit someone, I teach someone, not because I have to, but because I love God enough to do what I might not otherwise do. Now, how much am I willing to care? How on fire is my heart? Now, our passage here is John 4:35, and in this text, Jesus is, he's gone to Samaria, and he met the Samaritan woman at the well. We don't know her name, but we know who she was, and we know the conversation she had with him. And in verse 35, the disciples have come back. He had sat out by the well, and she had come out there to get water, and he talked to her, and the disciples are buying food in the city. And they came back out, and they were surprised that he would talk to this woman. Jewish men didn't usually talk to women in public. And Jewish men did not talk to Samaritans at all. And this woman had a bad reputation. So there were three strikes against her. And yet, they're surprised Jesus is talking to her. And that woman starts a revival in her community. She went into the city after she talked to Jesus and said, I met a man who told me all things ever I did. And people wanted to meet him. They came out and he preached to the whole city. But in that context, verse 35, he's talking to his disciples and he says, say ye not, there are yet 4 months, and then cometh the harvest. What this means is, a church might say, well, we're going to have a gospel meeting in the fall, and that's when we'll do our evangelism. That's when we'll reach out into our community. Is that a good time to reach out? Sure it is. You have a special effort. You have a guest speaker coming in. You have these events that give us an opportunity to preach the gospel to more people. It's a good time. But Jesus said, don't wait 4 months. Don't wait till your gospel meeting. Continue reading. Behold, I say unto you, lift up your eyes. Quit looking down in discouragement. Quit looking around in distraction. Quit looking back in your memory, living in the past. Lift up your eyes and see what? Oh, there's a good deal on watermelons or cantaloupes. No. Oh, World Cup is going on. Who won last night? Oh, who got traded in the NBA today? Right? Well, we can look at those things, but those aren't the important things. Lift up your eyes unto the fields, for they're wide already into harvest. In those days, the grain would go from green to yellow to white. And when it was white, it was time to be harvested. It was ripe. And so Jesus is saying here, look out on the fields. He's not talking about grain. He's talking about people. He's saying, look around. The fields are already white in the harvest. No, it won't be to have our gospel meeting when people will be interested. No, he said, look now. And what this means is that there are always people interested in the gospel. People that weren't interested last year are interested this year. People who are not interested now will be interested later. It's a cycle. And things happen. You know, sometimes life is going great. People are busy with two jobs, making money hand over fist, and everybody's singing their praises. They're getting promotions, and they feel like everything's great. They don't need God. But you let the economy take a downturn and the money is no longer there. The job plays out and they've been out of a job for 6 weeks now and it's really getting to be a concern. Or maybe there's been an untimely death in the family and it's really shaken them all the way to their boots to not have that beloved spouse or child or parent. And they're looking, they're searching. They know that there's got to be more to life than what they've discovered so far. Now, you don't know who that person is. So you just talk to people. And some of them will be interested now, and some of them will be interested later. You just keep talking to more people. The fields are always white. There's always somebody who's open to the gospel. But it may not be the person that I'm thinking about. It may be someone that God sends my way through his providence. Now, let's talk about a second. The question we're asking is, how much am I willing to care? This first level is, am I willing to go to the eye level? Am I willing to see people like Jesus saw people? I read about an American Indian who went to New York City years ago, and his host was, they were walking down a major street, people everywhere, and the Indian said, you hear that cricket? And the guy looked at him and said, how could you hear a cricket in all this noise? There's people and the horns blowing, and I mean, no, I don't hear a cricket. And the Indian said, well, you hear what you want to hear. Watch this. And he reached into his pocket. In those days, you still had change, right? Do you have any change on you? Probably not. They had change. He had change in his pocket. And he held it up, and he dropped a handful of change on the sidewalk. And all the people around turned and began to try to find those coins. They didn't hear the cricket, but they could hear money. What do I see? Do I see customers? Do I see clients? Do I see people that can vote for me? When I see a crowd of people, what do I see? Jesus saw souls. Number two, am I willing to go the second level of love? And that level is the level of tears. Now, this is from Luke 19:41. I'll put it on the screen, or if you may be taking notes. But Luke 19:41 is at the end of Jesus' life, and he is making his last visit to Jerusalem, and he's over across from Jerusalem. There's a valley, and then back, and the city's built on the hill. So he's over here looking into the city, and I picture it being teeming with people busy about all their business, and he's been there to preach several times, but he's had no success to speak of. Most of his conversions have been up in Galilee, not in Judea, not in Jerusalem. Those are the city folks. Those are the people that are at the temple, and they're busy, and they're important, and they're secularly minded primarily, and they're not really interested in this new rabbi who claims to be the Son of God. People who were living up in Galilee and all the villages that he went to, much more receptive. But as Jesus sat, I'll read to you verse 41. When he was come near, he beheld the city and wept over it. I want to ask you a personal question. When's the last time you cried? And what was it over? I never met Gus Nichols. He died when I was 9 years old. He was a great preacher from what everybody says. That's a friendly fly we got here. he did some marvel. I've been to his grave. Wow. I'm getting off topic. Okay. He went to do a gospel meeting in a town, not Jasper, where he lived. And the preacher was showing him around. And he took him to the rich side of town. There were these houses, and that time, he died in 75, so this would have been prior to that. At that time, they probably cost into hundreds of thousands of dollars. And they were big, and they were manicured lawns, and they were exclusive behind gate or fence and a gate. And the preacher was showing him this one and that one. And, oh, there's a really pretty one down here. And then he noticed Brother Nichols wasn't saying anything. And he looked over at him, and tears were running down his face. And he said, "Brother Nichols, what's wrong?" He said, "It's going to be so hard to reach these people with the gospel." That's the tears level. When I really care enough about somebody who needs the gospel that I'm emotionally distraught over it, I'm willing to cry. Paul was there, Philippians 2:14. I write, tears are dropping on the page when he's writing Philippians. I tell you now, even weeping, they're the enemies of the cross of Christ. That's the second level. Do I have the eyes of Christ? Am I willing to shed the tears of Christ? Number three is the sweat level. That is, this is one of my favorite stories. I'll tell you another scripture while I'm going here. We're going to Mark 2 if you want to go in your Bible. There's also John 9:4, where Jesus said, "I must work while it is day, for the night cometh and no man can work." So if you're ever going to get anything done with your life, how soon ought you get to it? Probably it's about time for most of us, because I have more days behind me than I have in front of me. You might be that way too. And I am not at the stage of life that I ever want to waste a day. I want to accomplish something for God every day, because those days are rapidly passing. You may feel that way too. So Jesus said, I must work the works of him that sent me, for there's night is coming when I cannot. No man can work. Now, what we're doing here in Mark 2, I'll just tell you this story, but it's on the screen. So Jesus is back in Capernaum, fishing village on the shore of Galilee, and he's preaching, and people are really excited about him being there, and he's in a house, and they've filled up the house, and they're listening, and Jesus is preaching, something like what's going on here tonight. And there is a man that lives in that town who has, he's crippled. He can't walk. And his friends say, you know who's, I'm paraphrasing. I'm imagining the conversation before what we read here. Jesus is here. You know what they say about Jesus? Jesus heals people all the time. I think if we could get you to him, he could help you. Maybe he was the one that asked them. Maybe he was skeptical. I don't know. But they said, come on, we're going. So he's got four friends. Mark 2, 1 through 4. And in those days, the beds were not like our beds. They were more like rugs. So each one gets a corner of his bed, a corner of the rug that he was on. And they're marching down the street carrying their friend on his bed. And they get to where Jesus is rumored to be, and there's a house, and they see a crowd there. And so they go up. They can't get in there. They're like, I can see him up there, but there's 200 people between me and him. How in the world? We're not going to be able to see him. I love these friends, because they don't say, well, we'll just come back later. One of them must have said, you know, if we were up on the roof, I wonder if we could get him down. Into, who thinks of these things, right? So I don't know if they found a ladder. There were some steps on the side that, up to the second story. I don't know. But somehow they had a man on a rug, and they carried him up to the top of the house. And then I see them sort of figure it out. Well, he's probably about right there. I wonder if we could... Maybe they reach to get one of the tiles. It pulls hard and it breaks. Ah, look, we could probably get a hole here. And so they begin to break up the roof. Now, what was going on down there? I guess the dust was starting to come down. What's all that noise up? And then the light comes in when they get a hole. And then they get a bigger hole. And then they lay down, and each one of them takes his part of the rug. Now, you got to be careful, because if you tilt it, you know. So they let him down, and Jesus is down here watching. There he is. And I guess the people that were close sort of backed up and let him. Let's read then what happens. And when Jesus, I'm in verse 5 now. And when Jesus saw their faith, not his faith, their faith, his friend's faith, he said unto the sick of the palsy, son, thy sins be forgiven thee. Well, they didn't come for sins to be forgiven. They came for his body to be healed. What was his greater problem, though? You could go to heaven with a bad body. You can't go to heaven with a sinful soul. I made a note here, what all true friends desire for each other. 1, 2, 3. Not help them to sin. That's a bad friend that helps you to sin. Not to ignore them in sin, but to lead them out of sin. That's what these men ended up doing. Now, I would note that there it took four people to bring him to Christ. Often we have to hunt as a pack. You understand that terminology as a congregation? Hunt as a pack. What does that mean? Well, one of us sets up the study, maybe invites a friend. I get told this sometimes whenever I'm in the same congregation, like I'll be at home. Somebody will text us, "Are you going to be there Sunday? I'm going to be there." Well, I'm bringing my friend. Be sure to welcome her or him. And I'm sure I'm not the only one that gets that text, right? So whenever that friend comes, they're welcome. They're looked for. We're excited to see them. We make them feel like we want them to come back, don't we? Yeah. So that it took four friends to get this man to Christ. It may take four of us. Sometimes you plant a seed, but you don't see it grow. Somebody else plants or waters that seed. Somebody else cultivates that seed. I've met people on the road before that when I last knew them, they weren't members of the church. But the seed was planted in the college youth group. Then they went wherever they went when they graduated. And the seed that had been planted had grown, and they were now members of the church, a Christian family. You see, we work together with the brotherhood in evangelism. All right, now we got to move on. So the eye level, the tear level, the sweat level. Am I willing to work to save souls? Anything that's worth anything, you're going to have, there's a lot of competition for it. You know, the highest places in your place of business, there's a lot of people that want that seat, that vice president seat. Or if there's a piece of property that's a valuable place to build a business, there's probably going to be a lot of people bidding on it. Now, do you think that the most valuable thing in the world, which are human souls, there's no competition for them? The devil's after every one of them. And false religions are after the same souls that God wants us to bring to Him. So remember that we are going to have to work for what's valuable. Churches don't grow with lazy members. Churches grow with hardworking members. Churches grow when you got people that are setting up studies, that are teaching the lost, that are bringing their friends. That's when churches grow. Not when we wish we were like we used to be. Not when, well, I'm there every time. Now, I'm not saying these things are bad. These things are good, but they're not enough. We got to get out of our comfort zone. We got to get out and do the work to bring people to Christ. Now, number four is what we might call the ultimate level. And this is Romans 9:3. And I've never reached this level, to be transparent with you. But this is Paul, the Apostle Paul. This is the goal for all of us. I would dare say none of us have reached this level, but I might be wrong about that. Paul said, "For I wish that myself were accursed from Christ for my brethren, my kinsmen, according to flesh." Paul said, if I'm understanding that passage correctly, that if I could save the Jews, I would be willing to go to hell for them. That's the ultimate level of love. Wow. Now, it's not possible to do that. But a person who has that in his heart will do what Paul did, which is use every ounce of energy for the rest of his life to save souls. That's the first question. Let's move to our second question. Second question back in Romans, it's in these notes in Romans 12. Oh, I forgot. Steve asked me if I could make it any bigger last night. I forgot. That's what I did between the fellowship and the... That may be a little easier. Is that easier to read? All right. So we're only halfway through the lesson before I remembered I did it. But there it is. There are your three questions. We just answered the first one. How you want to take a picture of any of this, you can do it from where you are. Here is the how much am I willing to care we just covered, eye level, tears level, sweat level, ultimate level. So now we go to our second question. See, these are color coordinated right there in the middle. So you got the purple, that question is answered there. You got green, that question is going to be answered here and here. So that's where we're going. Second question is, How involved am I willing to get? We talked about involvement last night, didn't we? 7 types of church members, AM services only, all services, and all the way down that list, 7 different levels. And then we talked about 10 different ways to be involved in evangelism. And in each one of those, we said, just move up a level. Find where you are and move up a level. Do more than you're doing. And on the 10 evangelism ideas, most of those, somebody said this at the fellowship meal tonight, the first 7 of those, anybody in the church can do. Doesn't take any special training. It doesn't take any special Bible knowledge. So we all can do those things. Be a greeter, a prayer, a giver, a sharer, a connector, initiator, an inviter. We can all do those things. Now, a teacher, we had about 15 last night, said they were willing to teach. And that was a good percentage of the audience, wasn't it? We've got the personnel to do it. We just got to get them people to be taught. Now, we're moving into a different area. This is second mile evangelism. Now, I'm pretty sure that some of you drove an hour or more to be here. You had other things that need to be done today, and here you are, not watching TV or mowing your grass or getting ready for tomorrow. You've set your time aside to be here tonight. Well, that tells me what kind of people are here, what quality of people are here. Now, this will have more impact in this audience than it would in a much larger Sunday morning audience because of the type of people are here. So what I'm going to do is just give you an idea, the power of an idea. So 5 frequencies of evangelism. How involved am I willing to get? This is very practical. I hope you'll say, wow, I never thought of that. Or if you thought of it, it'll be a good reminder. So what we're going to do is do individual and congregation. So the 5 frequencies are the natural frequencies: day, week, month, quarter, annual. 5 frequencies. And we're going to assign something to do for evangelism at all of the frequencies. We're going to do it for us as individuals, and we're going to do it if you're an elder or a leader in a congregation, then what can the church do to facilitate this? Let's go, I guess we'll go across and go down. So what should I do on a daily basis? If I want to be a second mile evangelist, if I want to give all that I can, well, these are some ideas that I could consider doing. Number one, every day invite one person either to church on Sunday or to have a Bible study. Every day. How long does it take to say, you want to come to worship with me Sunday? That's about 4 seconds. Is everybody going to accept? No. Is everybody going to turn you down? No. So somewhere in the middle, you're going to have somebody come and sit with you on your pew next Sunday. Or you can ask someone, you know, I've been studying the Bible. I've got this interesting program book, whatever I'm going through. Would you like to work on that with me? A lot of people will say, yeah, that sounds like a... Okay. The second thing to do every day is pray. One of our 10 last night was a prayer. And we talked about having a prospect list you pray for every day, maybe even 3 times a day, morning, noon, and night. There are your verses for that above it. We just read Romans 10, John 14, 12, 14, John 1, 46, in the context of come and see, come and see. Now, what can a congregation do on a daily basis? Well, a congregation should have prayers for the studies going on among the members every day. How do you do that? Well, we live in a good time for communication, right? So you can set up a members-only Facebook group, Instagram, a text group, and you can, in that private group, you can, Philip can say, I got one of these a little while ago for one of my former students. He's preaching. I won't tell you where, but in Tennessee somewhere. He texted the group. There's a WhatsApp group that the students had when they were students together in school, and I was in that group, and we would share ideas. Still use share some of his stuff. But he said, I got a Bible study in a few minutes. I'd like everybody to be praying about it. And you know those little praying hands emojis? They would click, 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 click on that. And then he texted in a little while and he said, well, you don't have to postpone it because he's moving this week and he doesn't have time. And he said, but I'm going to follow up on it. We're going to study next week. And one of the other guys said, the devil's had him too long, brother. Stay with him, right? Isn't that marvelous? Praying. I prayed. I'm sure that they all prayed when they found a prayer group. There's power in prayer. Number two, Mark 9:38, 1 Timothy 2, 1-4 goes there. What about weekly? I'm going to go faster because of the time. What, as an individual, should I have as my goal if I want to really help the church go, be a soul winner, help the church grow, be a soul winner, what would it be? Have a weekly Bible study. You know, it doesn't take every day, one day a week. I had a friend that preached near me some years ago. He was a very good preacher, but he's a very good evangelist. And he told me one time, he said, Alan, Tuesday night is my Bible study night. He said, every Tuesday night I try to have a Bible study with somebody. I got a friend out in Texas who was at a congregation, very evangelistic. That church was growing, and he'd been there like 10 years. Another church in another larger town, the elders visited him, kept visiting, said, we want you to be our preacher. And he said, I'm happy where I am. I don't want to. Well, come over and talk to us. Come over. So I finally went over and talked to them. He said, I'm honored, but I'm really happy where I am. We've got a good work going. They said, we really want you to preach for us. He finally said, well, I'll tell you what. I will come and be your preacher if. And it was a pretty big church. I've been in that congregation. I don't know how big it was then. It's bigger now. There's like 600 or 700 members now. But then, that was after he was at this church for 10 years. I had 200 baptisms at both places in those 10 years. But he said to the elders, he said, I'll come if every one of you will agree to having a Bible study with someone every week. And if you don't have a study, that you will get up in the congregation on Wednesday night and say, if anybody has somebody that wants to study the Bible, I would love to have a Bible study this week. And he thought that'd be the end of it. He thought that they would, you know, find another preacher, but they surprised him. And they said, we'll do it. And he went to be their preacher. I was out there a few years ago, and they'd outgrown their building. And they were, it was like the first month that they had been in their new building, seat about, I don't know, they had 600 or 700 members, probably seat 1,000. The church still grows. This is Sound Church. Church still grows. But it takes commitment. One night a week, we'll do it. One night a week. All right, what about on the congregational level? Every week, talk about evangelism. Hopefully, you're going to be having baptisms every week once this really gets rolling, and that makes it easy. Don't just announce your new member, those who are baptized one time, like if they're baptized on a Tuesday night. Then you say, on Wednesday night, we got a new sister in Christ. She's over here. You need to say that, like, for the next 2 weeks, because not everybody's there on Wednesday night. Plus, don't you want to encourage her? Don't you want to encourage the church? Remind them that there are people interested. We have a new sister. It's exciting. And talk about evangelism in the sense that we got several Bible studies going on I know about right now. Let's all be praying for them. And hopefully we'll have a new brother by Sunday. Talk about it like that. All right, the next one is on the monthly. Aim to have one baptism a month. That is not arbitrary. I'll show you the logic behind it. So if you use open Bible study method, there are three lessons. Normally you have one Bible study a week, so you 3 weeks you study with the same person. And then they generally make a decision to obey the gospel that third lesson, right? But not everybody obeys the gospel, but pretty good percentage of the time you'll study with a couple, or sometimes even an older teenager with parents. So if you don't have a conversion for this month's study, it may be you have two next month. So aim to have a baptism every month. That's just one night a week for one person. What about the quarterly? Well, I forgot the congregation. So every month have a lesson on evangelism. That can be one of two things. Number one, it can be a lesson teaching and encouraging evangelism among the members, keeping it on our minds. Or it can be a lesson aimed at converting people who are hearing the gospel preached. It's not only the people in the room. Every church I go to now, practically, is recording the sermon and live streaming it or posting it after the service. People from all over the world are watching us in our little churches. It's awesome. It's wonderful. So preach an evangelistic sermon like you would preach at a gospel meeting, preachers. Preach it on a Sunday morning. Now, number four is quarterly. Have a converts meal. All your new converts, maybe you got six or so by now, or maybe you include the ones from last year and you might have 15 or so. Well, you don't have to go to that expense by yourself. There are some people in the congregation that would be happy to fix a meal or some dishes and help you host it, might even host it in their house. And that might be something that a wonderful cook, a lady in the church says, oh, I'm not able to get out and do Bible studies, but I can certainly cook a meal and I'll get so-and-so to help me and we'll have it over here at my house. And then I have a Bible study with them. Ask them, do you have any questions? Did you get a good response from your families or were people sort of upset with you? You know, they'll share those things. And a lot of times that can really head off someone getting discouraged. Then the quarterly is the convert's meal. But for the congregation, it's an event. We have to give our members an excuse to bring guests to church with them, church services. We invite people to come every Sunday, but they're more likely to come if you say, we're having Family and Friends Day Sunday, and my family doesn't live here. I want to be by myself. Would you come be my friend? Oh, they'll feel sorry for you. Say, okay, I'll come. You know, or maybe they just want to come. But you see the idea, a family day. You could have a grandparents' day. All you grandkids, bring your grandparents. And have somebody in the congregation that is a photographer, take a picture and give it to them. And that will get you their address, too, if they're not members there. And when you mail it to them, then you can follow up and invite them to your next event. All right, so other things, VBS, some churches are doing, we used to do a meal, we called it a community meal, and it wasn't open for just everybody. It was open for any member to invite whoever was important in their lives for a free meal. We'd do a fish fry, we'd barbecue in the summer, homemade ice cream, shrimp bowl. I mean, it was really good meal. We had a guy, one of our members, one of our elders had run a food company for a while. He was really good at it. So we utilized that. You could, and people would come. And then you get to meet spouses and children and neighbors and kids that live some distance away. And it was really good to get people to come. And then we would always do it before a gospel meeting or a VBS. And then they get me as a preacher, you know, get up and say, everybody's welcome to come to our VBS, start Sunday, and really, you know, talk it up. And then some people would come. All right. Then number the annual, go on a mission trip. Sponsor yourself if you can. There is a mission trip just about every week. I was over at Warner Robins teaching last 10 days. And they left the day, a group left the day after that class. They're in Costa Rica right now. One of my students this week and two of my former students are on that trip. That's exciting. They go there every summer. They will take other people. If you want to go on a mission trip, just contact a preacher. And we will be able to hook you up with somebody that's going to a place that they could use your help. Then, what about your congregation on the annual? What about do a community door knocking at least once a year. Sweep the streets and see how many people you can contact. And we've got some ideas about how to be effective at that. We talked about it at supper tonight. We won't talk about that now, but if you want to know that, then I'll talk to you afterwards. We can talk at some other time. All right, let's answer our third question, which is, you can take a picture of that if you want to. I'm not going to be able to do that, but that's how to find your place in the church, how to get involved. If you don't get it now, then we'll get it. You can get it from me later. But I'll leave it up there just a minute. I'll go ahead and start the next one while that's on the screen. The third question is, what am I going to let stop me? You think if a person has decided to be evangelistic, the devil's going to let that lie? You think the devil is not going to try to put some barriers between a person who's wanting to save souls and lost souls? You can count on that. So how easily am I going to be discouraged? We talked about Paul earlier. You know how they tried to discourage him? They ran him out of town. Whenever they could get a hold of him, they arrested him, put him in prison. He was in prison in Acts 24 and 25 for 2 years. Can you imagine a type A personality like Paul, who was so gung-ho, got to go, got to do it, got to get... Can you imagine locking him up in a 10 by 10 room? Here's a little, for those who are deeper Bible students, here's a little tidbit to think about. What did Paul do before he became a Christian? He locked people up in prison. What happened to him after he became a Christian? He got locked up in prison. There is a scary connection. Maybe scary is the wrong word. Between a person's sins and the sin's punishment. The justice. Sometimes sin becomes its own punishment. Sexual sin is that way. Pride is that way. Anyway, all right, gave you enough time on that. Let's talk about now the five kinds of sacrifice that I might be called upon to make for the gospel. All right, number one, am I willing to give up my comfort? Isaiah 6:8, Isaiah said, "Here am I, Lord, send me. Send me, I'll volunteer." In Amos 6:1, it says that there were some who were at ease in Zion. They weren't willing to be put out. You could see in John 4:28, the woman left her water pot and went into the city and told them, "I met a man who told me all things that ever I did." She left her water pot. That's why she went out there, was to get water, but she figured out something was more important than the daily task. So am I willing to leave my comfort zone, willing to leave my task and responsibilities and to-do list to add to my life's activities, soul-winning endeavors? Luke 2:49, Jesus said, "I must be about my Father's business." Number two, am I willing to put my reputation on the line? Somebody says, "I would talk to my friend, but I'm afraid if I talk to her, she won't want to be my friend anymore." Really? What's she going to think about you standing in line at the judgment day? Do you ever sing that song here, "You Never Mentioned Him to Me"? Ever heard that song? Well, I don't like it when they announce that song. I mean, it's a good song, but steps on my toes. Does it step on yours? Maybe not. Reputation. Well, they'll think I'm a religious fanatic if I start talking about Jesus at work. So? Do you think they thought about Paul as a religious fanatic? Probably. How long should it take people who are around me every day to know that I'm a Christian? One guy said, "So far it's worked out really well. I've been a Christian 2 years and nobody's found out at work." That's not what Jesus intended, is it? All right, what about number three? Am I willing to sacrifice my money? Am I willing to put my own skin in the game? Am I willing to pay for tracks or mission trip or Bibles or gas to go here or there? Am I willing to support a missionary? Maybe I don't have enough money to do any of that. That's not required. If, you know, to whom much is given, much is required. But if I have it, am I willing to use my money? Actually, when I say my money, who should I really say? Am I willing to use God's money to save lost people? And you know, it's hard to outgive God. Have you ever thought about that? You try to outgive God and see what happens. Well, that's not your motivation for giving, or else it won't work. But God has a way of keeping his children in food and clothes, doesn't he? What about number four? This is where it gets tougher. Am I willing to pay the price of persecution? On money, you could put Hebrews 10:34-39. On reputation, I like 1 Corinthians 4:13. But on persecution, why don't we just stick with Paul? 2 Corinthians 11:23-28. Paul said, of the Jews received I 40 stripes 3 times. I've been beaten with rods. A night and a day I spent in the deep. I was stoned and left for dead. I've been in perils of my own countrymen. I've been in perils of the Gentiles. He was just ticking off the things he had suffered. He's not feeling sorry for himself. He was using his example to inspire them, just like it inspires us. You know, sometimes when I'm feeling sort of like, this doesn't happen too much, I'm sort of like, sort of hard being a Christian. They don't like me. Or this happened and it kept me awake all night. At one of those nights last week. You know, if you love the church, and I know you do, something happens to a church that you care about. You pray all night. You don't sleep much. I finally at 3:30 in the morning said, well, I'm just going to work on my next lesson. And then about 4:30 or 5, I got sleepy. You ever been there? I bet you have. Well, whenever I get like that, I think, boy, like that song we sing, I think it's All of Self and Thee, but it says, if I should die on a foreign field one day. Anyway, part of that is I've suffered much for you, God. And then I think about what Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians 11. And then I say, no, I haven't. I'm going to stop complaining because nobody's beat me on my back with a rod yet. Nobody came and put me in a prison cell. Well, persecution. And then life is the ultimate level. Am I willing to give my life? I'll tell you a quick story here and then we'll end this session, take a break. I was preaching in a gospel meeting. I won't tell you the state, but I think it was a Tuesday night. I got an invitation to go over and have supper at somebody's house. It's a farmer. And so he gave me an address, and I drove. It was a long driveway, dirt road, between 2 fields, a little white house sort of on a knob, big farming equipment all around. I had known this guy a little before the meeting. But I went in, we had a good supper, but I noticed he had lost a lot of weight. He didn't look good. So over the meal, I asked him, are you okay? And he said, well, and then he told me this story. He said, I've been going to Africa for the last, I think, 8 or 9 years. And he's not a preacher. He's a farmer. But he goes to Africa and he teaches whatever nation it is to farm. And he row cropping and how to deal with farming things. And while he's there, he teaches the Bible to them. He said, my last trip, I got bit by some bug. And he said, I've been to the contagious disease doctor in a major city. And I've been up there a bunch, but they don't know what it is. They can't figure it out. And then he said, if they don't figure it out, I'm going to die, they said. And then, not at the same time, but a little bit later, unconnected to that, he said, I'm about to leave on my next mission trip. You can't stop a church with members like that. I don't know if he's alive or dead tonight. But I sort of feel like if he's dead, he's in a really good place. That's the life level. I'm willing. Acts 15:26 says these men have hazarded their lives for the gospel. Have I ever hazarded my life for the gospel? I don't know. That's inspiring to think about, though. Now, the last thing before we take our break is our one assurance. We've been dealing with a lot of fives, fours and fives tonight, but this is just one assurance that Jesus is always with us. Matthew 28, 18 to 20. Go and teach all nations, baptizing them. For lo, I am with you always. You've never been a place where Jesus wasn't with you. You've never had a conversation Jesus wasn't listening to. You've never taught a Bible study that Jesus wasn't cheering you on. Jesus is with us all the time.